everyone, and welcome to minute 46 of season 8 of Movie Our Minute, the daily podcast where we FUBAR our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again this season is Nick Rehak of the Rabbit Hole Podcast. Welcome back to the show, Nick.
Thank you so much for having me back, Rob. I appreciate it.
Yeah. I've been looking forward to this. I always love having you as a guest, so, It's fun. Even when we can't do it in person, it's still fun.
I can close my eyes though, and it's as if you're right in front of me.
Oh wow. Very cool. All right, excellent. So minute 46 begins with Upham scratching himself and ends with the men moving across the square trying to get to safety. So before we even start anything, Nick, why don't you tell me a little bit tell everyone about your history with this movie?
So for the longest time, I always had this and Band of Brothers mixed up, not in thinking like, oh, that's Saving Private Ryan, the show, versus Band of Brothers, the movie, just that there were certain scenes in one versus the other. So every time I rewatch this movie, and this is, I think, my third or fourth rewatch, I'm always like, oh, yeah. Like, I just kind of remind myself. And then I keep going, oh, they're in that movie. Oh, they're in this movie. Oh, there's no way. Oh, he's in here. Oh, look at that. So it's always a fun kind of rewatch from a casting and just kind of remembering aspect of it. But this time around, I felt very mixed feelings and emotions throughout the whole movie. It's one of those where it's becoming harder and harder to rewatch it, which I find interesting because, like, I've never been in a war or any type of military situation. But the emotions that everyone's able to convey and just a comment and a snapshot of, like, what humanity can truly be like is, like, kind of terrifying. And it's important to take a look at those things and understand those things and better ourselves so we don't become like that. But it's always so wild. You know, you hear guys like, oh, man, if I was ever in a war, I'd go do this and that. And I'm just sitting there like, not me. Nope. No, thank you. So it's weird as a younger man watching this and being like, oh, how come so-and-so didn't do this or I would have done that, to, you know, a little bit older, a little more life experience and being like, oh, I relate with this character so much more now. Or, oh, I understand this person 1,000 times better. So it's been a really interesting litmus test, if you will, for the type of person that I am versus who I've been, you know, over the years. And I was very surprised that like kind of came out of me while watching this movie again. And it definitely has rekindled my interest in, like, kind of war pictures, because I've kind of not stayed away from them, but with everything going on, I've tried to stay with, like, stuff that's a little bit lighter, you know, musicals or comedies or just some random kind of mindless action of some sort. But this is it's a different kind of war film in that, yeah, you have the war elements, but there's so much more humanity and understanding of the human psyche to it than what I realized. So it was really, really great. And I'm really, really thankful that you had me on so this way I could revisit this film and kind of, you know, reinvigorate that type of filmmaking and just the type of looking at something. Yeah, it's hard to watch it, it's hard to talk about, but now that I'm so many more years on, what does it mean to me? Who do I relate to? And then in another 5 years, what does it mean? Who do I relate to? I think that'll be interesting, you know, as I get older.
Wow, that's really cool. I mean, it's very insightful, the way that you look at that from that perspective. I mean, I've been in military situations. Thankfully, I've never been in battle itself, but, you know, this movie, when it came out, scared the crap out of me because of all the training that I did over the years and stuff like that. So
I would imagine so. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's got to be. And I'm sure there's some moments and I'm sure there's even people watching the movie that are like, oh, that would never really happen. And then there's other people like, that would absolutely happen. If anything, it wasn't shown as strongly or portrayed as roughly as it could have been. Like, there's some things they do polish up for you. Yeah, because it is Hollywood and it is a movie. But this, if you want a feel good kind of movie, you're not going to find a lot of that here.
Correct. But I think that's also one of the things that makes this movie so amazing to watch.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially, yeah. Even more so, it makes this movie so amazing to break down the way that I'm doing it here. I mean, this is something that I had always I've always loved this movie. And when I started doing movies by minute, I was like, oh, I'd love to do Saving Private Ryan. And I was like, ah, people are going to want to hear more of a military aspect of it. And I said, well, wait a second. You know, after discussing it with a few people, most importantly, Jay, I came to the realization that, wait a second, people, you don't need to come at this from a military perspective. It's because the movie is not aimed at people who are in the military. It's aimed at everyone else to show you what's going on and, what goes on during battle. And you see the raw emotion of all these characters as this is going through. And to break it down minute by minute and just the things, even in the last 45, episodes that we've done, the number of things that we've discovered, you know, that you don't normally notice is just amazing. It just makes this movie even more and more fascinating to watch. I mean, I haven't yet rewatched the movie since I've started doing this. I probably will watch it towards the end, just to get another quick overview. But every time I've done one of these movies this way, it's enhanced my viewing of the movie because now I notice things that I didn't notice before, even when I'm watching it, at a normal pace, I guess you could say. So
yeah, absolutely. And I was gonna say, I bet even in minutes like, you know, roughly what, 15 to 30, just a lot of those beaches scenes, I'm sure you were noticing like, oh, I never noticed this person was just in half before. Look there's an arm over there, I forgot about that. I even forgot about just how bloody and unforgiving this movie is, and it's just like, whoa. Because it comes out of nowhere. Nothing ramps you up and gets you ready for it. It's just like, and it's happening now. And you have to react and you have to see. It gets really way more intense than I thought it would at times.
Yeah. Well, I can actually correct you and tell you that it doesn't start on minute 15. It starts a lot earlier. But yeah. by the second week, we were already into the whole thing. So,
deep in the trenches.
No, we weren't in the trenches yet, but we were still in the water. But, there was a lot of blood and gore going on from that point. Now, do you remember the first time that you saw this movie?
The first time I saw this movie was early high school. And I think it was because my uncle had just gotten back. He was deployed overseas for a little bit when we first, when the America first went to the, not first went, but when we initially went to the Middle East in the early 2000s, he was over there for a little bit. And when he came back, he kind of started watching old war films again. And one of them was this, and he's a big Band of Brothers guy. But as he was like rewatching that stuff, he watched this, and I can't remember if I watched it with him or if he let me borrow his copy. But either way, it was through him. So that would have been, I think, 9th or 10th grade, somewhere in there.
Well, if he listens to the podcast, you should get him to listen to this.
Oh, I'll definitely pass along to him. He does have he's got like a 30 or a 45 minute commute. So, I mean, he could do two episodes a day if he wanted to. he'd have to start later, but.
Yeah, okay, that's fine. But, one of the things is, I mean, we'll see this at the end of this. I did an interview actually with one of the sons of Band of Brothers.
What?
Yeah. So I mean, hopefully everyone will stick around to hear that. That'll be episode 165, which will come out in June. But I already did the interview with George Luz Jr. Fascinating interview. Almost an hour that he and I were just talking about Band of Brothers, about all the guys, about the connection between Band of Brothers and this movie, a whole bunch of different things, like how this movie came about. He talks about how, he's met Tom Hanks and Steven Spielberg quite often, over the years, and they always remember who he is. It was great. It was great talking to someone cool. like that.
That's yeah. really, really cool. I'm very much looking forward to that episode.
Yeah. So tell your uncle about that. Absolutely. Maybe that'll get him to start watching, to listen beforehand, until he gets there. So who knows?
Be ready to go.
Exactly. So, I mean, last week we had the whole conversation about what this whole movie's plot is all about. And today we get the tag end of that where, we first see Upham scratching himself as the men continue walking. He's probably like scratching a mosquito or something like that.
That's what I'm really sure. Assume.
Yeah, we're not really sure what it is. And then we hear Horvath give instructions, and he goes right. And then we get a few seconds of the men all walking again in formation, and then the shot changes. And this is one of my favorite. I don't even know how you would want to call it. My favorite transitions in the movie. The and I've always noticed this. You know, they show a picture of they show us a leaves, and then you see like raindrops fall on the leaves, and then the sound of the raindrops slowly get faster and faster, and then the change, and they show a puddle. And we see water, and we see raindrops falling into there. And again, you hear the sounds of the whole thing. And then they show us the other leaves, and then the rain gets faster and faster, and the sound of the rain then turns into gunfire. Mm-hmm. And I've always been so fascinated by this. I mean, it doesn't surprise me that this is a movie that was able to win a lot of awards, including the Oscar for best sound design and stuff like that. I mean, this. It's just amazing the way that they do this, but the idea of taking the sound of rain and somehow turning that into gunfire so seamlessly is just amazing. It always amazes me from that perspective.
I think it also just goes to show this is second nature for these guys at this point. Like it's the difference in gunfire and rain is just how much you have to pay attention. And I think it's just even the color scheme kind of changes a little bit. It goes for something that's a little, let's say, brighter and a touch more green, maybe even washed out. But then here comes the rain and everything starts to become kind of this just very blue, almost not whitewashed per se, but it definitely looks a little, it looks off. As in like here comes, not that here comes the danger, but, the rain is coming and not all good things have rain with them. So maybe we're headed for some trouble. I don't know. But I do agree with you that this transition has always been really neat visually as well as audibly. Yeah, audibly.
Yeah. That'd be the way we're gonna say. Yeah. Yeah. And then we get another shot of just pure rain with, lots and lots of splashes on the ground. It looks like it's, I wouldn't say mud, but it's starting to create mud, I guess. And then we get a whole bunch of boots running through it. So, these guys are just running through the rain and, moving towards where this gunfire is. So we hear explosions and gunfire, and we hear, we get to the point where we also hear people screaming in French, as the whole thing happens. And, we see that the men finally get to the edge of this little town where there's a lot of ruins and wreckage and stuff like that. Apparently, this place has been bombed out. We don't know by whom, whether it was the Allies or the Germans that bombed the place, but, someone bombed it. And then Miller gets to the edge of, a gate, and they hear someone on the other side, and he screams, "Thunder!" And then we hear a response, "Flash." I love the way that they use this as like a code word type of thing. Have you ever seen The Longest Day?
I don't think I have, no.
Okay, so in that movie, they explain it a lot better, the whole thing about how the thunder and flash works. But it's just very, very interesting about the whole thing. And then Miller then starts, fanning the men out. He sends Upham to the side to be able to stay safe. And then she goes, "Upham, over there, Ryben, you four go." Then we have the Ryben and a few of the other men start going in front of everyone else. And then we hear a voice on the loudspeaker, which we can't really understand what it is that he's saying. But, as these soldiers are all running across, Miller and his men running across this area to a safe distance. So we hear something on a loudspeaker, and as they finally get to a wall, which gives them a little bit more cover at that point, that's how this minute ends. So is there anything specific else that you wanted to talk about with this minute?
I do like the fact that towards the beginning of this minute, essentially after Upham kind of scratches the back of his neck, we just have some still moments. You know what I mean? Like the rain falling on the leaves, you know, the ripples in the water and the puddles before the soldiers start stepping in. And even then, the camera's just still. The camera's not moving around. It's giving us a minute to catch our breath before it starts to get a little hairy. And it's weirdly like picturesque at points too, and it almost feels like a nature documentary. Like you're expecting to see the rain, and then they cut to an animal, and you hear a narrator like, "Oh, it's starting to rain in the woods. Now the squirrel's got to find home in the tree and everything." But just to have that nice minute of like, "All right, here we go," and then boom, off we go. Because there's something interesting I found between this and the next couple minutes, but I'll touch on that, you know, in further episodes. But there's something interesting I noticed about the episodes for this week.
Okay, very cool. Very cool. All right, so every Monday we have a segment called Maestro Monday, where my guests will give their top five John Williams movie scores. So I know you're a music man, so I've been very interested in hearing what your thoughts are on this one. So why don't you once again start off with your number five and work your way up?
Mine are going to be very basic. It's really the hits with John Williams, because when you think of him, there are certain songs you just immediately start humming and ones that just hit so much harder than others. So I'm just going to go 5-1. 5, Harry Potter, specifically Hedwig's theme, just that big swirling and soaring theme that comes through. Number 4, the Indiana Jones theme. It's an absolute classic. Number 3, Jaws, can't go wrong. Number 2, Jurassic Park. Again, just this grandiose, swelling, beautiful theme. And my number 1, it's an obvious choice, it's Star Wars. Again, just this big, swelling theme that comes through. And how could it not be, right? Gosh, what is it? A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, then there's that moment of silence, and then bam, we're in space. Here comes the title cards, and the music is swelling. And what I've always loved about the Star Wars themes, and he's done it too in like the Indiana Jones and Harry Potter ones, but not to the extent that he has with the Star Wars ones. Across all 9 films and counting, there's always little elements and interpolations of themes that are tied into better enhanced foreshadowing, better enforce the emotion of what's going on. Like I enjoy 7, 8, and 9, not as much as the other ones, sure, but there's like moments in those films that are so uplifted from the score, and there's these beautiful, beautiful moments, and I don't think anybody else could do that like John Williams. He's just an absolute – it's whimsical. Like, it's whimsical and it's magical, and I know that's a weird thing to say words like whimsy and magic when you're talking about like Jurassic Park and Jaws, but it's just – it really transports you into this other world where it feels like anything is possible. So when we go on these adventures, you know, in foreign countries, or when we go to a park where the dinosaurs are run amok, or when we discover the wizards are real, it just feels that much more believable, and there's just that much more of an exciting sound behind it.
Yeah, for sure. They just do it so well.
Yeah.
That's why John Williams is the master, the maestro.
Pretty much.
Yeah, have you seen the recent documentary about John Williams?
I have not. No, I didn't know there was
Ooh,
one.
Ooh, you should see it. It's called Music by John Williams. Wow.
Okay.
It was so amazing, and you being a music person, I think you'd love it also. It talks about his history, and you know, I learned so many things about him, but also his personal life that I never knew, and stuff like that about you know, how he started doing movie scores and all that stuff. Just amazing. I highly recommend it.
I will go find that.
Very fascinating. I'm trying to remember what it was, whether it was on Netflix. I don't even remember at this point. But it was great. No question about that.
Very cool.
All right. So, Nick, would you like to tell people where they can find Nick Rehak?
They can find me over at rabbitholepodcasts.com. I'm on 2 shows over there. You have Lyrical Innuendo, where Bubba Weed and myself take a look at a song from the annals of music history, and we determine, is it about sex, drugs, or just good old-fashioned rock and roll? And then you have myself and Jason Soto on the program Play MST for Me. We are watching every single episode of Mystery Science Theater 3000 from the beginning – I'm having an absolute ball doing it, and I think you will as well when you tune in. So Spotify, et cetera, all those places you can find your podcast, but for sure over at rabbitholepodcasts.com.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. And if you feel like sending me an email, you can send it to movearoundminute@moveyourob.net. So until tomorrow, earn this.
Earn this. My solitude.